Blog Talk Radio.
Joe the plumber in Tent City, Mr. President, if I could ask you one simple question, is how could you make Timothy Guyton the head of the treasury?
You know what, never mind, I get it, you don't even have to say, you're just a spokesman, right? Same snake, new face, ain't the Hope for Change campaign, seriously, that was clever, cause hope is just a word, and you're the best lie ever. That's 16 months and start bringing him back, but you haven't, you've expanded, now you're trying to pass a draft, you said you cared about our families, but now it's clear to see that you don't give a fuck about us, all you care about is wealth, not peace, not dreams, certainly not me, but I don't see you as my chief. You're just a white-collar thief, another Tavistock production, trilateral connection, a Bilderberg commercial, and kissing just little messenger. I heard you with Kennedy, yes, I'm thinking more like Mussolini with the youth brigades and stars. Yeah, just call him now, see him, Mr. Yes We Can, Yes We Can, Yes We Can, what? I just got one more question, hey Obama, where you taking?
He was a righteous man, it's all the people invite this man, to make newer policies, the same laws they never will see. Except to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Yeah, a black man in a white place. Yo, the Uncle Tom of my space. Yeah, yo, I'm glad I went and said it. I'll say it and I'll say it loud. Yo, fuck the president. No sucker boo, this silly cat's trying to rob you.
Yo, say what? Yo, what you mean he trying to get us? An intelligent black man, I think you're jealous.
Yo, sucker, please go do your research. The big new and Kissinger were his teachers.
Yo, why you gotta go and hate on a brother? You know that's what they want us to do to each other.
Yo, true that, but the truth takes precedence. All anyone can really do is weigh the evidence.
And if you can't see the Wall Street cronies claiming all the turf for themselves and they homies, then you about to get jacked for your home. When you out on the street and you can't get a loan, and catch you thinking, would you do it again? Give your vote to a black man just because he said he was a righteous man.
The sort of people invite this man to make newer policies, the same laws you never will see. Except to support righteous men. Why did the people invite this man to make newer policies? Somebody help me please understand.
Oh, no, you're not the righteous man, no, no. Oh, no, you're not the righteous man, no.
All right. That sounds good. Hey, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Today's date, September 7, 2011 AD, in beautiful Washington, D.C. The United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Let's see, where to begin? I've been hearing, being a native of Illinois, Chicago, I've been hearing a lot of talk about President Obama being Lincoln-esque. You know, like President Lincoln, like there's so many similarities between the two. Both of them being from Illinois, both of them coming from humble beginnings. You know, the usual stuff. But I'll tell you something right now. President Lincoln, Barack Obama, if they were ever the same, is that necessarily a good thing? I mean, who would think that by comparing Lincoln to Obama would necessarily be a good thing? I'll have to admit that Barack Obama is not my favorite president. I know it's going to come as a surprise to a lot of you, but what may surprise you even more is that President Lincoln is my favorite president. Oh, some folks will say, yeah, I know he's your favorite president. He freed the slaves and, you know, it was slavery and he was against slavery and he wanted the black people to be free. And I can understand why a black man would have a president who's just like Lincoln as his favorite president. Well, being that I have a student of history, I know that Lincoln did not free the slaves, not all of them, and he certainly had no love for black people. In fact, Lincoln was a racist of the highest order and was known to tell jokes. You know where I'm going with it. I'm going to use the M word, but I'm not going to use it right now. He was known to refer to blacks as using the N word. Not that in those days the N word was unpopular or even frowned upon by anybody, North or South. It was just the way they were back then. It was part of the culture. So, can't fault Lincoln too much for that. But Lincoln, his idea was to repatriate America, blacks, all of them, back to Africa. That was his plan. He thought that blacks couldn't make it here in America, and that blacks would be better suited to just go on home. Let's just forget about the whole thing. That's what Lincoln was about. But see, the thing that made, that caused me to favor Lincoln over all of the presidents was something that is almost inconsequential. His intellect was one, and his quick wit. Lincoln was a very smart, very determined man with a quick wit, could spin a yarn and tell a great story. And I kind of admire that. I do. Obama is no Lincoln. Let's examine. First, we'll go with some eerie coincidences shared by Lincoln, by Kennedy, and Obama. Now, we've all heard or read the strange coincidences between Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. But during the campaign, Barack Hussein Obama and his supporters loved to compare him to those two great presidents. So just for fun, I've decided to compare Obama's life to these coincidences. Now, for obvious reasons, any reference to the assassination of Lincoln and Kennedy have been omitted. So let's start. Let the comparisons begin. Now, the last name of Kennedy and Lincoln each
have seven letters. Obama's middle name, Hussein, the one he won't let anyone mention, also has seven letters. Lincoln was elected to Congress in 1846, and Kennedy in 1946. Obama was elected to Congress in 1996. Huh. Lincoln was elected president in 1860, and Kennedy in 1960. Wow. Obama was elected president in 2008. So far, we've only got one comparison so far. The middle name letter thing. So I dabbled into research a little further, and Lincoln and Kennedy both ordered the Treasury to print money. Obama has pilfered the Treasury's money via Acorn and Fannie Mae. War confronted both Lincoln and Kennedy almost immediately after inauguration. Obama has promised to surrender and shut down the U.S. military's nuclear defense upon inauguration. Lincoln gave blacks freedom and legalized equality, and Kennedy enforced equality for blacks. Obama used affirmative action to get where he is today, thus leapfrogging over far more qualified people. Not much comparison there. What else have we got here? Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address on November 19, 1863. Kennedy gave the Berlin Address in 1963. In 2008, Obama spoke in Berlin and trashed America. Lincoln and Kennedy were loved by the common people and hated by the establishment. Obama is loved by the stupid, ignorant, and radical, no matter their position in life. Lincoln's vice president, Johnson, was born in 1808, and Kennedy's vice president, also Johnson, was born in 1908. Obama's vice president is Biden, who was born in 1942. The vice presidents of Kennedy and Lincoln both have 13 letters in their first and last names. Whether it's Joe Biden or Joseph Biden, the letters do not add up to 13. Oh my goodness. There's virtually a little similarity here so far with all the research that's been conducted today. There were no cars in Lincoln's day, but Kennedy rode in a Lincoln made by Ford. Obama and the Democrats destroyed the American economy, and Ford Motor Company may be going out of business along with GM. Andrew Johnson was a heavy drinker, as was Lyndon Johnson. Joe Biden does not drink, but Obama smoked weed and crack. Kennedy's father had been ambassador to England at the court of St. James, and Lincoln's son became the ambassador to England at the court of St. James. Obama's father was killed while driving drunk, after already losing his legs in a previous drunk driving incident. None of his relatives have anything to do with England. His brother lives in a hut in Kenya. on $12 a year, and his aunt is an illegal immigrant living in public housing. And she was ordered deported 4 years ago, but she's still here. So far, the comparisons are not ringing true. We've got several more to go. Lincoln and Kennedy were two of the greatest presidents of the nation. Obama will be, well, he's stolen a lot of material from Lincoln and Kennedy. Not much to go on there. Both Lincoln and Kennedy loved great literature and could recite poetry by heart. Obama can't answer a simple question without a teleprompter, which will take us to our next segment. Both Lincoln and Kennedy had young children while living at the White House. Obama has two young daughters. Wow, the similarities are racking up now. That's two. Kennedy bought a Virginia home that was the 1861 headquarters of Lincoln's first general-in-chief, McClellan. Obama paid $300,000 less than market value on a home he couldn't afford at the time from a real estate deal with convicted felon Antonin Tony Resco. Obama also got a sweetheart interest rate for his mortgage. Huh. Both Lincoln and Kennedy were famous for their wit and for telling hilarious stories and anecdotes. Obama is known for not being able to speak without a script or a teleprompter and has plagiarized many speeches. Obama also has absolutely no sense of humor due to his lack of intellect. Yes, folks, we all can see how closely Obama's life and career has mirrored those of Kennedy and Lincoln. So, what have we concluded here? Well, aside from Lincoln being from Illinois, which he isn't, he's actually from Kentucky. Well, Obama's not from Illinois, so aside from that comparison, that's pretty much it. That's all we really got to go on. So Obama and Lincoln really don't compare. Even though there are those who will compare the two, it's probably not a good idea. Because you and I grew up with Lincoln. Let me go ahead and take my caller, and then we'll get on with this comparison to the two, because I'm gonna lay out some stuff that you and I were not taught in school as it relates to Lincoln. Got a call from 678-678, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Hello. Wow. I think we have a bad connection here. 678, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Well, that one's not working out right now. We'll have to put the caller on hold and continue. We can get that call squared away. We'll be right back. Let me just check my numbers here and make sure I got this right. So maybe it's not so that it, make sure that it's not something that's happening on my end here. Nope, I think I got it right here. All right, so caller, when you're ready, we'll try again. Now, let's take a look at Lincoln a little bit more. The real Abraham Lincoln. Take a listen.
This week on Q&A, our guest is Thomas DiLorenzo, author of two books on Abraham Lincoln, The Real Lincoln and Lincoln Unmasked.
Thomas DiLorenzo, when did you first get interested in Abraham Lincoln?
Probably in the late 90s when I was a Civil War buff, and I started reading a lot about the Civil War and took courses at the Smithsonian, went on field trips. It was just a hobby of mine, and I'm an economist by training. I'm an economics professor at Loyola College in Baltimore, and I started thinking of how I could combine my profession, economics, with Civil War history, and I thought writing about Lincoln was the way. And I think the economic side of the story of Lincoln and the Civil War has been underdeveloped, undertold, and so that's how I got into it.
Well, in the late 90s, how did you personally at that time feel about Abraham Lincoln? And how much did you know about him?
Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I played baseball at Thaddeus Stevens Middle School, and I remember singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic in elementary school almost every day, and so I was educated like most Americans were about it. And I thought he was the savior of the Union and the man who freed the slaves. But there was always something that sounded kind of fishy about that story to me, even when I was a school child. And so after I educated myself, I started educating myself some more about it, and I sort of changed my mind, as you know, about Lincoln.
How would you describe your feelings about him today?
Well, I think in some of my writings, I talk about the Church of Lincoln, and he's been deified a great deal. And I think it's a very healthy, unhealthy thing for society to deify any politician, whether it's Abraham Lincoln or George Washington even. There's nothing wrong with praising them for the good things they've done, but I think it's dangerous to deify a politician. And I think I mentioned in my writings that politicians of all parties, even the Communist Party USA, have tried to attach their agenda to the martyred Abraham Lincoln and have used him and his words and his deeds for all sorts of purposes, some good and some not so good. And so so I think it's, I don't have a really high opinion. And I guess one of the things that really bothered me when I started looking into this was when I found out that all of the other countries of the world that ended slavery in the 19th century did it peacefully, and that included New England and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Indiana, the northern United States. And as an economist, I started thinking, well, why was this not an alternative for America? Why was it only in America where there was a war attached to the ending of slavery? And that's why the subtitle of my first book, The Real Lincoln, is includes the words, an unnecessary war. I think it could have been possible for us to do what England and Spain and France and Denmark and other countries did, end slavery peacefully. So what was the purpose? I've concluded that the purpose of the invasion of the southern states was what Lincoln said it was to destroy the secession movement, and he called it saving the Union. But all the death that was attached to that is the thing that sort of haunts me, that, was it really necessary for some 650,000 Americans to have died? And, if you standardize that to today's population, which is 10 times higher than it was in 1860, you're talking the equivalent of 5 or 6 million people dying, standardizing for a much larger society than we have today. And so that is what really hit me hard, of why that all that death was necessary just to save the Union. And on top of that, I argue that the Union wasn't saved because the Union was voluntary. The Union of the Founders was voluntary, and it was no longer.
Okay. So what do we have here? What we have here is a situation where we have deified President Lincoln. And I've been guilty of this myself from time to time. I am a big fan of President Lincoln, even though I know pretty much the truth about President Lincoln. Not the truth that I was taught in school, but the real President Lincoln. And the writer whom you just heard, the historian whom you just heard, made a great point. Every country that has ever
had slavery within the last 400 years has ended slavery without any bloodshed at all, except for one, the United States of America. Now, we're not going to count Haiti, because when the French were thrown out of Haiti, the Haitian slaves killed nearly every single white person on the island. I mean, slaughtered them all. Nobody escaped. So we're going to leave those guys out, because it wasn't even a fair fight. But other than that, the only other country that went to war with each other over slavery was the United States of America. Now let's talk about Lincoln for a minute. Because, as I stated earlier in the program, Obama has been compared to Lincoln in every way. And even Obama has compared himself to Lincoln. Obama took the oath for the Senate in Springfield, Illinois. Put his hand on the very same Bible that Lincoln used. Was sworn into office of the presidency of the United States with his hand on the very same Bible that Lincoln had his hand on, that Lincoln swore on. The comparisons are wild. So let's examine it a little bit more closely to see if we really want to compare Lincoln with Obama. And we understand this insatiable need for the media to compare Obama to Lincoln. I really do. But there's no need to rehash the potential similarities all over again. But we will. On one hand, comparing a president to another president, especially one from Illinois, who did the job well, makes all the sense in the world. And above all else, Lincoln was a decent man. On the other hand, there are elements of this comparison that are wildly a bunch of crap. Towering over his generals, someone of Lincoln's background would have a real hard time getting elected today. Rising from manual labor, he was once a rail splitter, to the highest office in the land, Lincoln had no formal education. As Paul Johnson suggests in his book, Heroes, the only reason Lincoln was able to enter politics at all was because it was so easy to become a lawyer in America. And though he undoubtedly was a great president, he did have one blind spot worth noting. Lincoln did not regard blacks as equals. Or rather, they might have been morally equal, but in other respects, they were fundamentally different and unacceptable as citizens without qualification. Lincoln said bluntly that it was impossible just to free the slaves and make them politically and socially our equals. He freely admitted an attitude to blacks which would now be classified as racist. I'll quote Lincoln. My own feelings will not admit of equality. The same was true, he added, of the majority of whites, North and South. Whether this feeling accords with justice and sound judgment is not the sole question. A universal feeling, whether well or ill-founded, cannot be safely disregarded. End quote. In such statements, and many others of similar nature, which makes Lincoln's speeches and writings so riveting, they show that his salient characteristic was candor and willing to admit and articulate truth, however inconvenient and unheroic or distasteful or inconsistent they might be. So here we are. Now, Barack's attitude toward people of color is surely different. But the more interesting question is whether Obama sees himself as Lincoln does, as a Democrat who reacts to events rather than directing them. As Johnson puts it, to some extent, President Obama will have no choice but to respond to the event, to the evident, eventful truth of the country's economic problem. But from the aggressive policy proposals we've seen so far, we shouldn't expect that to last long. Now, Judge Andrew Napolitano had some harsh words as it relates to Lincoln. After hearing these words, would it be appropriate to suggest that President Lincoln and Obama have a lot in common? Take a listen to what Judge Andrew Napolitano, a Fox News contributor, had to say about President Lincoln. And trust me, everything he has to say is completely factual. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
You're also very critical of Lincoln, his hypocrisy. You know, the usual historians say, look, these were other times. You have to forgive them this. They at least helped create a constitution with a Bill of Rights. You're more merciless on Lincoln, who you called the tyrant. Could you describe his back and forth with the border states and his position on slavery and what the real cause, you believe, of the Civil War was?
Question. Did the Emancipation Proclamation free the slaves? Answer, it established and permitted slavery in the border states. You really have to read the document before you can understand that. Question, was Abraham Lincoln interested in freeing the slaves? No. Abraham Lincoln said, I don't care if we have slaves or not. I just have to keep these southern states in the government because my job is to keep the country together because we don't have an income tax. And if we don't collect duties from the ports, and most of them are in the southern states, we can't have a federal government if that money is not coming in. Look, Lincoln arrested 3,000 journalists and publishers and editors in the North. These are not guys with guns shooting at federal soldiers. These are people arrested because of their words, because of what they said about the war. And he had them tried before military tribunals, every one of which was invalidated after Lincoln's death by a Supreme Court that he had just appointed that said the Constitution exists in good times and in bad. When the legislature of Maryland was about to enact legislation he didn't like, he sent troops to arrest every single legislator. He argued against the right to secession, but he caused West Virginia to secede from Virginia so we could have two more senators in the Senate and more representatives in the House of Representatives. He was the most tyrannical, most disingenuous, least faithful to the Constitution president we've had in American history. His troops burnt courthouses, raped women, robbed banks, killed civilians on a large scale for the first time in the history of the world, all in the name of a defensive war.
And you say it was the prime cause, was not slavery.
In my view, the prime cause was Lincoln's fear that the government would collapse if it didn't have economic activity from the South, particularly duties and excise taxes collected at every port from Wilmington to Houston. There were only three other ports in the country, Boston, Philadelphia, and New York. All the others were in the South. They lost 75%, or were due to lose 75% of the income from those ports.
And you mentioned states' rights in your book.
It's not about justice. It's not about agenda. It's not about mobilizing people. It's about dialing for corporate dollars. These two parties have sold the U.S. government and the American people to the highest bidders.
So, yeah. Do we really want to compare Barack Hussein Obama and President Lincoln? What Judge Napolitano laid out for us right there is the truth. It's exactly the way Lincoln felt. He said so. His own letters dictate exactly how he felt. Most of those letters were only recently made public. We grew up believing that Honest Abe, and he was honest, was the great emancipator, the man who freed the slaves, the man who freed us all and worked tirelessly to keep the Union together. But in fact, Lincoln was indeed a tyrant. For him, the ends justified the means. So if the ends justify the means for President Lincoln, and Barack Obama compares himself to Lincoln, and the media compares Obama to Lincoln, if we know the truth about Lincoln, then we have to say that, well, Barack Obama is following the mode of a tyrant. Let's look at some more similarities. Lincoln was elected in 1860. Obama was elected in 2008, nearly 150 years later. Lincoln eliminated involuntary servitude for half of the country. Lincoln did not free every slave. He did not free every slave in the country. He only freed the slaves in the South. That was it. If you were anywhere else, you were still a slave. Not every man was free by Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. And even those in the South were truly not free, not even remotely so, because the South had seceded and were not obligated to follow the laws of the North. Oh, sure, if a black man could escape his bondage in the South and make his way to the North, then he was free. And Lincoln was a very smart man because he knew that blacks would what? Owe him a debt of gratitude and would then shore up the ranks of the North's armies. Kind of like when Lyndon Baines Johnson signed civil rights legislation and then openly stated, for the record, that now I'll have those niggas voting Democrat for the next 200 years. That's pretty much what Lincoln did. He freed the slaves in the South. And any slave that could make it to the North usually joined the army and then fought against the South. It was a brilliant tactic. How do we want to compare Barack Obama to Lincoln, who was a tyrant, who did what he thought was best? Consequences be damned. We don't want to make that comparison. And we certainly don't want Barack Obama comparing himself to Lincoln. We should frown, seriously frown upon any government official and any media outlet that compares Barack Obama to President Lincoln. Because, as I just stated only moments ago, President Lincoln did whatever he wanted. For President Lincoln, the ends
justified the means. We don't ever want a president of the United States to get the idea that the ends justify the means. Especially not this president. Let's move on with the comparison. Lincoln and Obama were both married to really ugly chicks who both went nuts. Each man's wife gained over 40 pounds while living in the White House. Lincoln was hit in the head from behind. Obama hit his head up his behind. Lincoln was shot at Ford's Theater. Obama shot up while riding in a Lincoln made by Ford. Both men had vice presidents who were illiterate Democrat senators. How many of you remember Joe Biden seriously considering running for president of the United States some years ago? He did. For those of you who don't remember, a scandal broke just after he announced his bid for the presidency back in the 80s. The scandal was plagiarism. Not only had Biden plagiarized his thesis and several other papers in college, he plagiarized many speeches that he attributed to himself. And thus was forced to drop out of the presidential race. Now, I believe it was the same race that Kennedy first entered into. Not the Kennedy. The fat one. The Obama-Lincoln comparisons are wildly exaggerated. We don't want to compare these two. Now, I stated my reasons for labeling President Lincoln as my favorite president. And they have nothing to do with his politics. They have everything to do with the man. Next segment, after this brief message, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spreads socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of the Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
The 9/11 Crusades.
The Crusades never ended for one religion.
One religion.
Islam has risen and fallen many times in its bloody history. The morning of Tuesday, September 11th, was a beautiful morning.
A beautiful morning.
And then, after the first plane struck the first tower, our lives were changed forever. As we watched in sheer horror, trying to wrap our minds around what had just happened, wondering how it could possibly be worse than this. All eyes in the world were watching as the second plane struck the second tower. That's when we knew how it could get worse. And then, reports of other planes that were unaccounted for. Where were they headed? The answers came as the events of the day unfolded. The 9/11 attacks were their attempt to rise to power after influencing and infiltrating for the past 90 years. WAAU Radio Network, in conjunction with several independent Blog Talk Radio hosts, presents a spectacular three-part series honoring the historic, heroic, and epic battle we face to rid our nation of the fanaticism that has plagued the entire world for centuries. This special will air on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern.
This 9/11 special will span 6 hours and 3 radio shows, all found on Blog Talk Radio. Look for Tesla's show named Socialism is Not an Option, the Hot Topic episode. The special co-host and contributor is Annie Abellis of the Blog Talk Radio show, Southern Sense. Next is Same Ad Radio, hosted by me, David Graham. Joining me as my special co-host and contributor, host of his own show, still flying over the heartland, is Flyover Territory, a.k.a. Eric. And finishing up with Dr. C. Robert Jones, as he hosts his show called The Conservative Report. The three of us felt like doing something special to keep the memory alive and to rekindle the patriotism on display in the months and years that followed. This is sure to be a memorable occasion and a fitting memorial.
The 9/11 Crusades, Part 1, The Beginning. Tesla's Hot Topic episode will bring us through the lead-up to the events of 9/11. He'll look at how Islamic atrocities provoked the original Crusades. And why did they hate us in 1783? And Thomas Jefferson read the Quran? Tesla will look at Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and the history and origins of the Muslim Brotherhood. Part 1 airs September 11th, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern.
The 9/11 Crusades, Part 2, The Aftermath.
Tesla will pass the baton to me, David Graham, with Stayman Radio. We'll walk through what has happened since, with all the struggles of the family, the first responders. We'll talk about the controversy at the Ground Zero Mosque, and where we stand currently. There will also be an appearance of Haran Angel to give us thoughts and feelings from the day of the event from an Iranian point of view. Hour 2 will feature Charles Faddis, a recent guest on Stay Mad Radio, a retired CIA agent with his unique perspective. We'll talk about the wall of separation and the Clinton connection. Part 2 airs September 11th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern.
The 9/11 Crusades, Part 3, The Reflection Forum.
Doc Jones' Conservative Report will continue the show to illustrate where all this is going. The Doc will take you through his memory of the day, and then he will open his show reverently to any callers wishing to express their story, express their feelings on that day, and what their thoughts were. There will be historical facts laid out in the fashion that only Doc Jones can do. And of course, no shortage of opinions. And please make this your reverence forum to close out the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And part 3 airs September 11th, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern.
We hope you'll join us for any or all of these special shows to learn and remember with us. These episodes will all be in our archives if you can't be live with us. And we want this to be our contribution to the memory and reverence of the event. We sincerely thank you for supporting our special and hope it means as much to you as it does to us.
Never forget.
Wow. This Sunday, folks, tune in if you can. I know it's a football day. I'll be watching too. I've got 37 NFL fantasy football teams, but I'm going to sacrifice. It's my little sacrifice. As insignificant as it is, or will be, 9/11 was an historic day for everyone. It was a tragic day. I am still angered by it. I have not watched any of the 9/11 movies that have come out because I'm still angry. There have been dozens and dozens of documentaries. I've sat through just a couple because I'm still angry. Hell, I'm angry still about the Pearl Harbor sneak attack. I've sat through only one movie. I've so many times wanted to watch Torah, but I could never sit in front of the theater, the TV, and watch it because it would always anger me. Just the thought of it. And I feel the same way about this cowardly attack on this nation. I can barely sit through it. So it's going to be a difficult task to get through 9/11 for me, as it will be for so many others, including especially all of those who've lost friends and husbands and wives and relatives. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Let's move on. Our teleprompter president. Let me ask you, when comparing Lincoln to Obama, have we lost our oratory skills, the art of oratory? Some of the greatest speeches ever delivered were delivered by President Abraham Lincoln, who used no teleprompter. Only a few handwritten notes. He wrote all of his own speeches, every single one, including the Gettysburg Address, only an hour and a half before he was slated to give the speech. Spoke the few words without looking down at the paper that the speech was written on. But here we have a president who will use a teleprompter for as few as 6 people in a room and can barely string a sentence together without the aid of handwritten notes or a teleprompter. And yet, Obama is considered to be one of the most intelligent presidents in the history of this nation. In fact, by some on the left, most on the left, he is considered to be the most intelligent president ever. And But yet, if he is so intelligent, why can't he string a sentence together without a teleprompter? Why is it so difficult for the most intelligent president ever to memorize a speech, in whole or in part? Indeed, Obama's gone from being a man known for his soaring oratory rhetoric and impeccable skills, communication skills, to being dubbed the teleprompter president. Popular talk show host Laura Ingraham, my girl, began calling Obama tennis match after watching one of the president's speeches. When he read the script from the teleprompter, his head was bouncing from the screen on the left to the screen on the right and back again. Many times, I got dizzy watching him one time. I won't watch any more of his speeches. I'm wondering, where the hell is he looking? Where's his head going? I mean, I know a lot of you have seen Obama's speeches, and you see his head going one way, and then the other, and then back again, never looking directly at the camera, never. Mr. Obama's Teflon image is certainly wearing away, as the public, at least the American public, began to notice that the man is human and not this super genius, not God, not Jesus, not Abraham Lincoln. Now, I'm going to go through a couple of clips where Obama is using the teleprompter. The teleprompter craps out, and dude is rendered completely and utterly speechless. It's so embarrassing that I'm embarrassed for Obama. So let's take you through just a couple of these embarrassing, awful teleprompter crap outs. Perhaps you'll get just as much of a kick out of it as I have. First, this little clip where Obama claims that President Lincoln built the Intercontinental Railroad while there was a civil war going on. This genius of a president. It's certainly not true. All Lincoln did was sign a piece of paper giving authorization for a few tracks to be built in the southern part of the country. But Obama tells his audience something completely different. Let's take a listen. We'll be right back. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Different. Listen, Abraham Lincoln helped to build the the Intercontinental Railroad in the middle of the Civil War, because he understood this was going to be important. The Intercontinental Railroad in the middle of the Civil War.
Okay. Now, either Obama thought that his host and the people listening in were a bunch of morons, or he's the moron, or maybe he's just a liar. Maybe he thought that we wouldn't know any better. Could that be it? Because not one word of what Obama said was true. So either Obama's the idiot, or he thinks that we're idiots, that we don't know any better.
Now, yeah, there'll be some folks who'll go out and say, you know what, Obama said that that President Lincoln built the railroad, the Intercontinental Railroad, while the Civil War was going on. So there's nothing we can't do. Uh-huh. Let's move on to something even more interesting here. Obama versus Lincoln. This is one of my favorites. Take a listen. Tell me what you think. The call-in number is 347-884-8500.
And I am the one that the people call Obama, the person standing in front of you, dictating the things I am saying to you.
I have come back from the dead because I heard that a black man had become president. I was excited to see the long-term effects of my actions.
Excited, you should be, for I, Obama, am the presidential African-American person that was the subject of your last sentence.
Sir, why must you pointlessly talk in such an elegant manner for things that don't require it?
Well, the last president, Mr. Bush, wasn't a very good speaker, and wasn't very popular with the people, so I, in my infinite wisdom, decided to embody the exact opposite of him, black, a Democrat, and a good talker, in order to gain popularity with the people. Oddly enough, I was actually less qualified than Bush was when he ran, and I probably wouldn't have won if I wasn't black.
Well, frankly, I reviewed your policies and actions over the past few years, and you seem to not be changing much despite your change campaign, and furthermore.
No, I'm not listening. No.
You mad, bro?
I ain't even mad. I just realized that I have a meeting that I have to go to. Obama, out.
Yep, he mad.
Okay, we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. House historians, press corps members, and others have begun noting how frequently President Obama uses the teleprompter for speeches, long or short. Obama's reliance on the teleprompter is unusual, some have written, not only because he is famous for his oratory, but because no other president has used one so consistently at so many events, large and small. After the teleprompter malfunctioned a few times last summer and Obama delivered some less than soaring speeches, reports surfaced that he was training to wean himself off the device while on vacation in Hawaii. But no such luck. How hard can it be to deliver soaring oratory? How hard can it be to deliver a great speech when you have the words right in front of you? All you have to do is practice the delivery. Hell, I've done it reading some of the news clips here. I sometimes use Evernote, and I will clip some of the web pages, and often I will read from them. And I'm sure to some it sounds like the information's coming right out of my own head, but it's not. Sometimes. Oh, yeah, I'm more than capable of original thought. And most of my show consists of stuff that's coming right out of my own brain. But every once in a while, I'll read something. And if I practice, if I sit in front of the screen here and read it over and over and over again before the show, I suppose I could make it sound as if I'm the one who thought of it. Take, for example, Jack Webb. Dragnet. Does anybody remember the old Dragnet TV show? Does anybody remember the black and white Dragnet TV shows before they became colorized? Does anybody remember the Dragnet movies? Well, Jack Webb had an interesting way of delivering the lines. his lines. You remember that staccato beat he had for delivering his lines? It was because Webb did not believe in memorizing lines. In fact, Webb was one of the first actors, directors, and producers to use a teleprompter or telestrator. And he wouldn't know the lines before he was to deliver them until he got in front of the camera and the telestrator, as it was called back then, would begin to scroll the lines. And Jack Webb would read them. All that fast talking he did when he was delivering those lines, it was because he was reading them right then and there. He believed that the spontaneity of delivering the lines played better. And then afterwards, remember the old Jack Webb TV series and remember some of the lines delivered by the other actors as well as Webb. Remember how they were delivered? It's because everyone, nearly everyone on the set, delivered their lines via the telestrator. Very few of the actors and actresses on that TV show and in those movies memorized their lines. Jack didn't believe in it. And even one of the greatest actors in modern times, I'm talking about, yeah, you know who I'm talking about. On the waterfront, the Godfather. You know who I'm talking about. Yeah, that guy. He was so lazy that he would have handwritten notes everywhere with his lines on them. The famous Godfather scene where he's sitting across from all the other Dons. There's a bowl of fruit on the table. And written on that bowl of fruit was Marlon Brando's lines. So the next time you watch The Godfather and you watch that particular scene where the Godfather, Marlon Brando, is delivering his line about if anything happens to his younger boy that he won't forgive and so on and so on. Think about this. Brando is reading his lines off the bowl of fruit that's sitting in front of him. He's reading the lines from the palm of his hand. And there are lines written on his sleeve. He didn't memorize any of that. It was all written somewhere out of camera shot for him to read. And didn't he deliver those lines brilliantly? Watch The Godfather. Watch the scene. Think of Barack Obama and this use of the teleprompter. Patriot Greg writes, Obama can deliver a great speech, but he's not allowed. Obama's not allowed to speak freely. He must read the script that is handed to him by his puppet masters. Greg, I believe you. And I tend to agree. But there's something else I agree with. And that is that Barack Obama is incapable of delivering a speech without the aid of that teleprompter. He's not capable because he is not as brilliant as he is made out to be. That's all part of the plan. Patriot Greg is on to something here in the chat room. Barack Obama has been molded to be the president of the United States. Why are there at least three books out that suggest that he, or an outright states that he's the Manchurian president? In fact, I have a book on my shelf here behind me that's called The Manchurian President. Barack Obama was set up to be put in this position. He is not this brilliant genius. He's just an average man with average intellect. And you've got these morons like Adrian Grenier, the guy from the television series Entourage. You've got George Clooney and a whole bunch of other morons claiming that Obama is the genius, the smartest man on the planet. Well, when you're just dumb, anybody who can string a sentence together would seem to be smart. Now think of how Barack Obama has so much trouble putting a sentence together without when he doesn't have that prompter in front of him. So, I viewed a series of emails and some YouTube clips of Barack Obama stumbling through bouts of verbal incoherence when speaking without a prompter. But with the prompter, he speaks brilliant oratory. Is anybody surprised? I contrast one of the greatest actors of all time, Marlon Brando. With the greatest actor of all time, Spencer Tracy. The line at the end of the movie in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner was 13 minutes long. 13 minutes, 57 seconds long, where Sidney Poitier and his newly minted bride are standing in front of Kate Hepburn and Spencer Tracy. Spencer delivers nearly 14 minutes of oratory, memorized, without the aid of prompter or even a break. He delivered his line straight through. Nearly 14 minutes of passion. I urge you to watch that clip. If you can find it on YouTube, if you can watch the whole movie, great. But the last bit of the movie, where Spencer Tracy, who's only 2.5 weeks from dying, delivers the most impassioned lines of any actor ever, straight through, for nearly 14 minutes. That's called oratory skill. Obama reads from a teleprompter, and when he doesn't, it's That's not an intelligent man, folks. And even though Patriot Greg writes that Obama's not allowed to speak without a teleprompter, he couldn't. He can't. He's not able to. So let's take a little bit of a listen to some live mistakes Obama's made when he hasn't had that prompter in front of him. They are hilarious. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, or the Situation Report, however you prefer. We'll be right back. Take a listen.
President today, imagine George W. Bush. Imagine they called Reagan an amiable dunce that created 21 million new jobs and double revenues to government. Just a side note. George Bush, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, any of these Republicans, they're all dummies in the minds of liberals, but none of them run the economy into the ground like Carter or Obama. Let's watch the president, including his gaffe today. Can you imagine any of those people not knowing the age of their own children and some other gaffes? Take a look.
Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, these countries are tiny compared to the Soviet Union. You send a kid to the emergency room for a treatable illness like asthma, they end up taking up a hospital bed. It costs, if you gave them treatment early, and they got some treatment and a breathalyzer or an inhalator.
On this Memorial Day, as our nation honors its unbroken line of fallen heroes, and I see many of them in the audience here today.
I've now been in 57 states.
I don't know what the term is in Austrian, wheeling and dealing. Navy Corpsman Christian Bashar. Corpsman Burchard, Corpsman Burchard.
Malia's 13, Sasha's 10. They're 13 and 10.
No, they're not 13 and 10. They're 12 and 10. Now, hang on, let me get out a calculator and figure out the age of my own kids. But
I know it's funny.
No, I love
mean...
when you play this because
that first clip, Obama, during that first part of the clip, Obama teleprompter crapped out, and he had no idea what to say next. He had no idea what to say next. Billy writes in the chat room that some people are orators and others are great readers. Yeah, and I agree, Billy. But when you base a man's intellect on the fact that he delivers a great speech, well, hell, that's just wrong. It's just wrong. Especially when you're reading the speech. Take Benjamin Netanyahu, who stood before Congress a couple of months ago for 45 minutes, give or take, had no prompter, and spoke to all of Congress for 45 minutes. Had a few handwritten notes, which he barely glanced at. If we base intelligence on whether or not a person can read from a prompter, well, that would mean that Benjamin Netanyahu is 10 times more intellectual, or 10 times the intellect of Barack Obama. He read from no prompter for 45 minutes. And I certainly wouldn't suggest that Spencer Tracy, who could deliver his lines nonstop without a break for nearly 14 minutes and make you believe it, as being more intelligent than Marlon Brando, who read his lines off of, you know, a bowl of fruit in The Godfather and his own sleeve. His own sleeve. Both of them delivered their lines brilliantly. But Obama's intellect is not based on anything real, other than the fact that he attended some great schools. Well, many times I've made the case for George W. Bush as being supremely intelligent. Many times I've said that, hey, you know, I've said to friends like, hey, listen, you attended high school, you didn't finish college, and you're saying that President Bush is dumb, that he's not very smart? How can you say that? I'll make the argument that George Bush attended Yale and Harvard. He also owned his own company. He was a fighter pilot in the F-4 Phantom. He's done many things. He's been governor. He's president. He was president at the time. He's done all of these things. How could he be so dumb? Contrast with that with President Obama, who has attended the best schools as well. So if that's the case, if that is indeed the case, then who's the idiot here? Obama's being judged as this great oratory. He's judged this great speaker, and that his intelligence is so great based on what? The fact that both he and George Bush basically couldn't string a sentence together without a prompter? Or the fact that George Bush rarely ever used one, if ever? Would we still be talking about George Bush's lack of intellect based on the fact that he screwed up a word here or there? If he had used a teleprompter as often as Obama has?
Now, I reject the overall charge that President Obama just can't speak without a teleprompter, despite the evidence that he's often fumbled without one. The truth of the matter is, the guy seems lost. His facts are often askew when he doesn't have that prompter in front of him. He often says things that are simply not true or just plain dumb. And not many people call him on it. I mean, he relies so heavily on that prompter, one wonders if he is in fact a puppet of somebody. For example, the mistake that President Obama made on St. Patrick's Day at an event with Irish Prime Minister Brian Cohen. Mr. Obama thanked himself for inviting all the guests. A teleprompter mix-up he should have been able to stop if he were simply reading and paying attention to what he was saying. He thanked himself. Take a listen to this. You'll enjoy it thoroughly. It's my man Rush Limbaugh talking about this very thing that I just laid out for you. It's queuing up. I'm sorry.
You know, the Brits.
Here it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, British journalists are doing such a far better job of covering events in this country than our media because they're not personally invested in Obama's success. As I mentioned at the top of the program, the teleprompter embarrassed President Obama last night during his White House. There were a bunch of White House parties last night for St. Patrick's Day. The big bashes, big parties in the middle of bonuses and a recession and an economic downturn, big parties at the White House last night, and the teleprompter totally embarrassed the President of the United States. I've read accounts of this in the U.S. drive-by media, and they pretty much present Obama as a guy who saved the day with his cool, his aplomb, his calm demeanor. The British newspapers skewer Obama on this incident. Here is what happened. Irish Prime Minister Brian Cowan was just a few paragraphs into his speech in Washington when he realized that it all sounded a bit too familiar. And it was. He was repeating the speech that the teleprompter had told Obama to say mere moments ago. The teleprompter forgot to change speeches from Obama's to Cowan's. So Cowan stopped, he turned to the president and said, "That's your speech." I'm surprised it took him 20 seconds to figure out it wasn't his. So Obama started laughing, and Obama went back to the podium to take over. But when Obama got there, this is hilarious. When Obama got there, the teleprompter had then switched back to the Cowan speech. The teleprompter switched back to the Cowan speech while Obama was laughing and heading to the podium. So when Obama then reached the podium to try to coolly, calmly save the day, he ended up thanking himself for throwing a huge party because he ended up reading the speech the teleprompter wrote for the Irish prime minister. So here come the Irish guy who goes up to make a speech after Obama, and the teleprompter playing a little game on everybody doesn't switch the speeches. So the Irish guy gives the same speech for 20 seconds Obama gave, and then suddenly realizes, wait a minute, I just heard this. So he turns to Obama and says, "That's your speech." Obama's comes back to the podium. While Obama's on the way to the podium, the teleprompter very craftily, very shiftily put in the right text for the Irish guy, and Obama starts reading that. And he continues to read it until he thanks himself. Because the British or the Irish guy's message in the prompter was, "I want to thank President Obama, but So Obama thanked himself. At some point, do you not realize that you just stop before you get to the point where you thank yourself? And, of course, the British papers talk about, what is this guy's dependency on the teleprompter here? The U.S. media is talking about his quick-wittedness and his... I do not use a teleprompter at my... That's another... A party! It's a party, folks! A freaking party! And there's a teleprompter at a party! I don't use a teleprompter, period. So, folks, I'll tell you, I have some questions for the teleprompter. You know, this is getting out of hand. I have some questions to the teleprompter since it engaged in behavior last night that embarrassed both the Irish Prime Minister and the President of the United States. I mean, when a teleprompter, he got somebody who's as great an orator as the President to thank himself for throwing a party. You got to love this prompter. So, teleprompter, do you have a name? Teleprompter, in your opinion, how is President Obama doing so far? Did he convey the level of anger you hoped for regarding what you told him to say about AIG? Teleprompter, is the president ever argumentative with you, or is he compliant with your instructions? Teleprompter, have you ever thought about helping Secretary Geithner, or do you work for just one person? Teleprompter, how are you and the First Lady getting along? Are you dating anybody, teleprompter, Mac or PC? There's a rumor, teleprompter, that you send out a small shock to the president when he mispronounces words or mangled phrases you tell him to say, or that you can even make him cough. Is that true? Teleprompter, in private, is Joe Biden as buffoonish as he is in public? Tell us. We want to know. How does it feel, teleprompter, to be the first teleprompter for an American president? You're the first teleprompter. Capital F, first teleprompter. Teleprompter, as a consumer of electricity, how do you feel about cap and trade? Do you feel threatened and endangered? Teleprompter, do you listen to talk radio when you consider yourself a ditto head? When did you first meet Barack Obama, teleprompter? And are you paid with taxpayer money? And if so, did you have to fill out Obama's questionnaire before you were hired as first teleprompter? And teleprompter, what are your plans post-presidency? Will you retire to Silicon Valley? Or will you tell Obama what to say when he's giving speeches at $1 million per year after his presidency? And finally, teleprompter, are you nervous about President Obama appearing with the chin on The Tonight Show without you?
Okay, that was hilarious. Here's the deal, folks. Think about this for a moment. Billy is hosting a party for some good friends. And he's setting up the catering, the finest foods, the finest wine. And there's just one thing missing. Billy needs to make a speech. So he hires out to the teleprompter company to get himself a nice teleprompter and a speech. And he stands in front of the teleprompter at the party and delivers a speech for his good buddy, wishing him well. Only he realizes the speech is the Gettysburg Address right after he's nearly finished with the speech. Does that make Billy a moron? Or Patriot Greg? Or me? Or Pendleton Marine? Come on, guys. You can't... Obama's an empty suit. That's where I'm going with this program for tonight. The guy is an empty suit. You just can't do it. This is not a brilliant man. We've been led to believe that he is a brilliant man. We have been led to believe that this guy is a genius, that he is so smart. It's all been put out there for us to believe that we are in the presence of greatness so that we'll follow this man.
so that we will follow him and do what he says and do what he thinks is best, because he's the man. We're done here, folks. I'm out of time. Thank you all for being here. Good night.
The Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf. And that hasn't shifted. And one of the, the tragedies of the civil rights movement was because the civil rights movement became so court-focused, I think that there was a tendency to lose track of the political and community organizing and activities on the ground that are able to put together the actual coalitions of power through which you bring about redistributed change. In some ways, we still suffer.
Starting today, we must begin again the work of remaking America.
No more, no more.
Negative.
get drunk. Some pussy gun and can't be a dungeon. Let's believe that we find the two messages that you can sign up. The Constitution defines what we need. We were born to be free. Hear the warning, not me. Follow me and not lead to theirs.